Welcome back. You're listening to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Russell's been talking to comedians.
Indeed. The name Ardal O'Hanlon might not mean a great deal to you, dear listeners, but Father Dougal might. O'Hanlon, who's in New Zealand for this year's International Comedy Festival and to practice his first love, stand-up comedy, is best known for his portrayal of the dim-witted priest in the classic British sitcom Father Ted. I sat down with him at the Classic Comedy Club this week and quickly established that there's more to him than that.
My name is Ardal. Very unusual name. People were asking me before the show, like, what sort of a name is that, Ardal? You know, as if I picked it, you know, as if I enjoyed being called Ardal the Dardal, the big fat Mardal all my life. Do you think I like that? Well, basically, the truth is that my parents named me after a village in Norway. This is absolutely true, by the way, which is best known for an aluminium plant that's been linked with a very serious outbreak of Alzheimer's disease. Now, very warped sense of humour, my parents calling me after an environmental disaster zone. You know, I'm just being paranoid, according to my brothers, Chernobyl and Sellafield.
Ardal, we seem to have more Irish stand-ups than ever at this year's Comedy Festival. Is there a roving diaspora of Irish comedians roaming the world en masse? Or?
I can only apologise on behalf of the nation. It seems to be a pretty big export, all right, on behalf of the Irish. I don't know why, you know, I don't think Irish people are intrinsically funnier than any other type of people, but for some reason or other, there is a plethora, I think is the description.
How much of your comedy is about being Irish? Is it good material to be Irish?
I don't think so. I don't think you can trade on your Irishness. I think I am Irish. I'm proud to be Irish. I spend a lot of my time in Ireland. So a lot of my subject matter is about my own life. And so I don't kind of hide that. But, you know, most of the stuff I'm doing, you know, I think it's equally relevant to any other society because most societies are converging now. You know, New Zealand, Ireland, Australia, Britain, you know, they're all going in exactly the same direction with all the rules and regulations. And, you know, you're not allowed to use your mobile phone in the car anymore, all these things. You're not allowed to smile in your passport. And so that's sort of a starting point for me is like, so while that's true of Ireland, it's equally true of any other place where you play.
You were describing yourself as a stand-up even when Father Ted was at its height. Is that still the way you see yourself above all else?
Yes, I insist I'm a stand-up. Despite what other people think, I am. And I always have been to some degree. I mean, like I started out as a stand-up and then Father Ted came along, which was great. And I was delighted about that. You know, I was able on the back of that to play to bigger audiences, but the way things worked out was I ended up doing less stand-up to bigger audiences, which is not an ideal situation to be in. So it's really only in the last 4 or 5 years that I've got back into it in a very meaningful way, you know, in a very kind of a systematic way where I really want to do this and I want to do it every day because it really sharpens the mind, you know, it concentrates the mind. You have to engage with the world around you and what's going on and, you know, so even though most of it's quite, you know, it's very silly and all the rest.
The condoms, they're useless, aren't they? Condoms are useless and they're ineffective and they burst. And your stomach just can't cope with the sudden impact of 2 kilos of cocaine.
But it starts with like the world, the truth, the, you know, whether it's the public truth or the private truth, you know, about your marriage or about the war in Iraq, you know.
Yeah. And it's better to play smaller rooms. You prefer doing that?
I much prefer doing that, actually. I mean, it's very intimate, very, very immediate, very lively. Sometimes in the bigger rooms, you're not going to get the sort of feedback that you might like sometimes, you know. For a start, if you start a conversation with someone in the audience, most of the audience aren't going to hear it, so they're going to feel excluded. So it's not the same. But then, you know, the bigger shows have a kind of an event feel about them by the same token, so it's kind of different, you know. There's an excitability in the bigger venues sometimes that you don't get in.
But it's all completely different from TV, isn't it, where you spend a lot of time standing around doing nothing?
Yeah, you're scratching your hole, basically. And, you know, I suppose in TV, it's an unreal world in many ways, you know, and you're kind of spoilt. And, you know, most comics who kind of end up accidentally in television, you know, I don't think when you start out as a comic, you know, you have these visions that you're going to end up on TV. And certainly in my case, you know, I didn't. So it's a surprise to you. And you kind of enjoy being spoilt and pampered for the first few years. I mean, it's lovely and people bringing you fruit every few minutes and rubbing your ears from time to time. That doesn't happen in stand-up at all. No one touches you. But, you know, I think stand-up is like, for a start, it's your own stuff. That's the most important difference. It's very real. It's very live. You know, you stand or fall on what you do on stage, which is an extension of your personality, you know. Some comics are probably more like their offstage selves than I am. I mean, I suppose I'm slightly more detached. I think because I'm kind of a fairly retiring person off the stage. I think I do have to go undergo a massive transformation to get on the stage. So I have to kind of pump myself up and become a sort of, it's like a werewolf type of transformation, you know. I grow a lot of hair.
Now, of course, as we discussed before the interview, anyone who searches for your name in YouTube is going to find out a little bit about your current show, because you were in Australia and there's already clips from that up on YouTube.
So I'm very nervous today as well. I was walking around Melbourne all day. I was looking in the shop window. I saw a shop window was full of essential oils, and I don't have any of them, and they're essential. I'm lucky to be alive here at home.
Yeah. Good for us, not so good for you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've mixed feelings about the whole thing because it is relatively, it's a relatively new phenomenon, and it's so far out of one's control. What happens? I gather there might be a clip from maybe the gala show in Melbourne, which wouldn't even be it wouldn't be a good representation of my show, because it's a kind of a 4 minute set that one would do, you know, over the course of an evening where there are 20, 30 comics on the bill. So it's not really a good reflection. I don't think comics like doing those kind of galas. So you don't want that sort of stuff to end up on YouTube. Or any stuff that will end up on YouTube that you haven't given permission to. So it's kind of changed the goalposts a lot. We had the situation in America there about 6 months ago when Kramer, you know, a fantastic character actor from Seinfeld, got in serious trouble because he made some racist remarks in a comedy club. Now, you know, no one in the right mind would approve of his remarks or would condone them in any way whatsoever. But you would have to ask yourself the question. I mean, that was designed for the people in that room at that time. The people actually clearly demonstrated by walking out and by jeering him and booing him what they thought of his remarks. And I believe that's where it should have ended. I don't think there are any circumstances in which that should have got into the public domain. You know, comedy clubs, surely there must be places where people can cross the line slightly. You know,
I assume it's kind of damaging to go out on the stage with that in the back of your mind, that there might be some guy there with a camera phone, though.
I think so. I think it's going to inhibit comics. I think, you know, this is not really strictly relevant to me, because I suppose I'm not really out there as a comic. You know, I'm not playing it safe, you know, but I'm doing much more general observational kind of stuff. But for some comics, you know, which, you know, are essential to the health and well-being of any society. The edgier comics, the more confrontational, politically motivated comics. I think if that inhibits them, if the technology that exists today inhibits them, I think that's a bad thing. If they're going to censor themselves before they go on stage, I think that's wrong.
Mm. Now, do you embrace any of the new media world? Have you got a website? Have you got a blog?
Well, you know, I don't, actually. I am fascinated by the technology. I'm very interested in it. I did do a website. On the day of 9/11, I was with my friend designing a website. And it's a beautiful website, but I don't think it's still up there because I neglected it. There's a couple of fan sites which are very comprehensive, which look like official websites. And I suppose I've just sort of let that situation carry on without getting too involved. I don't know. I'm just a very private person. I mean, you know, I'm not interested in, you know, clogging up cyberspace with my ramblings and drivel.
Now, one thing I was actually able to have a look at that you've done online is a TV series called So You Want to Be Taoiseach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about that. And I suppose tell us what the Taoiseach is.
Basically, I moved back to Ireland with a young family and stuff like that. So I kind of quit doing sitcom and got into this documentary area, which is fascinating. And the latest one I've done is one called So You Want to Be Taoiseach. Taoiseach is Prime Minister in Irish. So our Taoiseach is Bertie Ahern. He's our Prime Minister. And this is a kind of a rough guide to how one would become a politician. This is election year in Ireland, and people are a bit jaded and a bit blasé about politics. So this was a kind of a tongue-in-cheek attempt to kind of explain to people like what these people actually do and how one would go about getting involved.
Getting on the party ticket means picking the right party to satisfy your hunger for office. So what's on the menu? Well, if political parties were breakfasts, the Greens, they're a popular continental-style breakfast, a bowl of muesli. Clearly very good for you, but could you be bothered? The Labour Party, well, they're a lighter breakfast. More of a side dish, really. You've got a croissant and a good old sturdy scone. The PDs, small but intense. Something like a double espresso to go. Leaves a lingering aftertaste and leaves you feeling a little bit edgy. Anyway, if that lot haven't given you indigestion, make your choice and pick the party that best suits your ambitions.
So that's what that was all about. It was mainly anecdote driven. To be honest, it wasn't very funny or anything like that.
Well, you yourself come from a political family, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Your father, Rory, has had a really notable career in Irish politics.
He did indeed.
Two siblings in local politics. Never tempted yourself?
No, I wouldn't have the patience for it, to be honest, or the discipline for it. I think stand-up suits me much better. But, you know, unlike most comics, you know, cynical and all as I am, I do have a sneaking admiration for people who put themselves out there. whatever about their idealism, which is suspect in most cases, their passion is undeniable. Like, you can be sure they work all the hours of the day and the night. Of course, ego and ambition plays a huge part in it. But, you know, in any field, in sports, media, comedy, ego and ambition must play a part.
Even though, as you said, your comedy's more relaxed, you occasionally venture on the wild side. But was there ever a thought that you could embarrass your father by what you were doing?
All the time, actually. It's one of the reasons I moved to England. Because, you know, you like, comedy is so alien to what he was doing, and he's a very private person and very kind of mild-mannered sort of a person, so he didn't want this unwelcome attention. Now, he didn't banish me from the country, far from it. But, you know, to make your way in comedy, you know, you had to go to London for any Irish comic. Simply had to go over and test the waters over there. But I do touch on all sorts of subjects which might be controversial or contentious or whatever. But, you know, the trick is, or whatever, is to try and find a unique and funny and original way of doing it. So, I mean, no subject is taboo as long as you're doing it in the right way, I don't think.
As you say, you went to London and you got cast for Father Ted by Graham Linehan.
Who would have thought they'd been hit by lightning would land in hospital?
What? What are you talking about? Of course it can land you in hospital.
Well, it's not usually serious, is it, Ted? I mean, I was hit by lightning a few times. I never had to go to hospital.
Yes, Dougal, but you're different from most people. All that happened to you was balloons kept sticking to you.
I never saw myself as an actor, certainly not at that time. So it was all very kind of making it up as we went along and just trying to enjoy it. But I think I was tapping into that. I remember thinking my younger sister was very, very innocent and very, you know, sweet-natured. And I remember thinking I was kind of being her, you know, being a dog or something, being a puppy. You know, Dougal has a dog-like quality, and I always thought that.
Yeah. I actually knew Graham back when he was a music journalist, because I was one there as well. And
really?
He struck me as a like this really gentle sort of guy who'd turn around and write this really biting comedy. Is that what he's... what he's like to work with?
First of all, he's a real anorak about comedy, a real student of comedy. Himself and Arthur Matthews, his writing partner. They're walking encyclopedias of comedy, and they're great, great blokes. They were incredibly hardworking. They can quote comedy till the cows come home. But he's a very frantic man, very frenetic and passionate man, you know. So, and more and more as he's got older, he has become more interested in politics. It's quite interesting, even though his new sitcom doesn't touch on that at all, I don't think. He has a weblog, which is very, very good. And what he does is he gathers all these stories from around the world, you know, mainly from American news stations and TV shows where American politicians put their foot in it and so on. So he gets quite angry and uptight about all of that, which is good.
So you stay in touch with him still?
I do, actually, yeah. He moved briefly back to Dublin as well.
Now, the other bit of TV that you've done reasonably recently was Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Were you a fan beforehand?
I was, particularly of the new series, of the new version, you know, over the last, third series now, I think. I think it's great now. It's very funny, it's very scary, and it's quite moving, quite profound at times.
Have you ever done a role with makeup like that?
No, nothing like that. It was all part of the fun. I mean, to be honest with you, you know, it's a tiny cameo, and you know, but it was great fun to do and great to be part of it. Like, you know, I am a big fan. My kids are big fans of the show. And I am also conscious that, you know, whatever I do in my life, it's probably the only thing I'd be remembered for in 50 years' time, doing a cameo on Doctor Who.
Now, you've been on the road for quite a long time on this trip. You're in Melbourne for a month, Adelaide for a week. You're here for, you know, nearly a week. Well, what do you do next? Just go home and rest, or?
Go home and have a good long bath and stay put for about a month or so, I think. I had my family out in Melbourne for a month. I mean, you know, when you've got young kids, you can't, you know, just do this for the crack like I could years ago. So if they weren't able to come, I wouldn't have been able to do this at all. But so go home now. I've got some writing projects to get cracking on, and also more documentary stuff.
Mm. What sort of writing projects?
Sitcom stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are you planning on appearing or just?
Writing and appearing in a thing. But, you know, it's basically a writing thing, commission, you know, which is long overdue. You know, I think the recognised career path for a stand-up comic is to go and write your own sitcom. I was lucky enough to be in other people's sitcoms over the last number of years. But I suppose I always, at the back of my mind, I thought, oh, Jesus, I should really be writing my own, you know.
Well, we'll look forward to it. Thank you very much.
You might be waiting.
Ardal O'Hanlon there, and if you like the sound of that, he's playing in Auckland at the Comedy Festival tonight and tomorrow night. Get in there.
And that's our show for the week. The Comedy Festival is now running for another couple of weeks, and you really ought to get out and see some of these guys. They are terrific. Russell's going to be talking to some more next week, and you'll be hearing next show from the Indian Laughter Clubs. Till then, though, you can pick up anything you missed today on publicaddress.net/radio, and you can find out what's happening there next week there as well. We'll catch you again next week.
You've been David Slack, I've been Russell Brown, and we're grateful to New Zealand On Air.